thrilled to have Rogers Communications here.
We can sell some back to you.
Their CEO, Tony Staffieri. And Tony, thrilled to have you here and look forward to your insights.
Thank you, Vince, and good afternoon, everyone. Good to be here.
So why don't I just lob up an integration update question to start with, and you can go as far with it as you want in terms of revenue or OpEx or just personal cultural issues. But 7 weeks in, how's the integration going so far?
Yeah, as you said, 7 weeks in, terrific. We, particularly given the length of time we had to plan, we came out of the gate fairly quickly. And we looked at a few different aspects of the integration and coming together with Shaw. First and foremost was getting the right team set up. And so you saw very quickly not only reconfirm the leadership team that we had that's been executing just terrifically over the last year and a bit, but we had some additions to it. And I was thrilled to have those new members come on, which included deep operational experience and knowledge of Shaw. And so once we got that, we quickly moved to the next few levels. And so that's already been executed. And so I would say the team structure was very fast out of the gate. The second part of it, and I've talked about this before, was really trying to get the customer experience right. We knew we expected you'd get the two use cases of a Rogers Wireless customer in the West saying, "I'm a customer. Now what? How do I get internet? How do I get TV? And what's that experience going to be like?" And we knew we weren't going to have the systems integrated. That'll happen by July 1st so that you can talk to the plan on a bundled basis and you know the customer, etc. So we have what I would call a hands-on concierge, mostly manual with back office support to make that transition. And it was good to see the customer engagement on that, whether they were a Rogers customer looking to bundle with cable products or they were a Shaw customer sort of saying, "How do I get Rogers Wireless as part of a bundle? And what does that look like?" So we're really pleased with what I would call the initial days of that customer experience integration. And I just gave you a couple of simple use cases. And then the next piece is what I would call going through the contracts that we have, third-party spend. And that would include contractors, but in a big way, suppliers. And so those discussions are already underway in terms of avoiding the duplication, first and foremost, and two, leveraging on just the bigger buying power. And I would say that piece is the duplication one is easy. The renegotiation, those discussions have started. And so really pleased with how that's going. This year, in terms of synergies, we continue to be confident about the $1 billion of synergies over 24 months. This year, for the 9 months, we're fully expecting our run rate to be $200 million and $600 million when you look at the full 12 months being the end of Q1 of next year. So everything's on track in terms of how we're thinking about the integration. In terms of the people, I got to tell you, there's probably two areas that have been a really pleasant upside surprise. And one is the cultural fit. The team out there, and we've been spending a lot of time out there from day one, not just me, my team, and the broader team overall, the enthusiasm to join Rogers. And as a few of them have said, they felt like for 2 years they had one arm behind their back, and they are fiercely competitive. And so it's good to see. And they want to win. And so it's really, from a culture standpoint, both coming from what I would describe as an entrepreneurial background between Rogers and Shaw, you clearly see that. And so that part is just working out beautifully in terms of what I would call the cultural integration and attitude of that. And then the second piece is when we look at the state of the asset, and there's a lot of and there wasn't a lot we could see, but they have a very good network. And so contrary to speculation that they had deprived investment in the network. I would say they maintain network quality, which is good to see. And so, you know, they have a network that performs beyond market demand, and you see that loud and clear. But the second piece, you know, if there was a part where they pulled back investment, it's on expansion. And for us, we see that as an opportunity. You know, a lot of the construction throughout Alberta, but in particular in BC and Vancouver, we have fiber close to or near the prem, and we're already underway in terms of let's finish passing the suite or the home, and for the most part, they're condo suites. And so we see a good opportunity there in terms of upside. So I know I rambled a bit, but those are just some of the initial, you know, initial goings on in the integration.
No, that's great. It's a good starting point, Tony. Thank you. The you mentioned the July 1st cutover. So just to be clear today, if I'm a Rogers Wireless customer, I call in and say I want to get internet from Shaw, still, I guess it's still branded. They manually patch me through to a concierge and set it up. But as of July 1st, the one sales rep will have that right on their computer screen to do it.
They can see your account and hook you up.
Okay. Yep. So is that the time frame when, because I'm a little surprised I still see Shaw ads on TV and stuff like, is that when we start to see the Shaw brand start to disappear and become all the wireline products become Rogers in Western Canada?
That's right. So the early days, you know, what you'll see on branding is more of Rogers together with Shaw. And we'll quickly phase out during the month of June much of what's left of Shaw only that are specific to the cable products. So you'll see that phase out, and then you'll start to see the Rogers together with Shaw more prominently. And we continue to, you know, towards the end of the year, we'll see how customer sentiment reacts. You know, I've always said the customer will tell us when is the right time to move to the single brand, and the intent is to move to the Rogers brand. And I see that happening more towards the end of the year. And if it goes a little longer, then it's because, you know, the customers are showing us that it still means something in terms of the Shaw brand. So we'll continue to use it while it's valuable.
Now, I think, as you've known, I've questioned the $200 million for this year. It seems to me if you've already started some headcount reduction, you've already started renegotiating with suppliers, there should be enough months in this year for it to be more than $200 million of synergy realized. But you're talking about a couple things that sound like they may be short-term dis-synergies of some manual processes that have to be done until the systems are integrated, maybe still spending on Shaw advertising that probably wasn't necessary in the fullness of time. Is that why it's only 200? Because there's some temporary upfront stuff, or is the 200 still just potentially conservative?
Well, you know, if we're making external disclosures of a number, we want to be sure and confident we're going to deliver on that. And so while there is some, you know, as you described it, dis-synergies, those are really small. You know, there is a possibility we could see upside. Let us go through, you know, the actions we're going through. And, you know, sometimes you get hiccups that delay you further down the line. And so we're trying to be, you know, what I would describe as prudent and reliable in the estimates we're putting out there. If all goes well, then there is the opportunity for potential upside. But I don't want to overstate it at this stage.
No, totally fair. Just on the revenue synergies a bit more, we've heard you speak since the deal was closed, and I think you had a good plan of what the key targets were to try to enhance market share and revenue growth. Now that you're in it a bit more, can you sort of outline where the most exciting opportunities are? You mentioned fiber in condos that maybe they weren't doing. I don't think they've done as well in the new to Canada market as you have. There's the business market. Can you just sort of rehash sort of from best to worst what you think the biggest areas of revenue synergy are?
Sure. You know, in terms of more immediacy, we are seeing good demand for bundle. I don't want to overstate it. We've always said, let's see how the market does in it in terms of wanting a bundled offer. And one of the dynamics that changed for us is offering internet, what we call grab and go. So you can walk into a store, You're probably going in for a wireless plan. And traditionally, the consumer wasn't ready to book an appointment for home products. So I would say that bundling was slow. I can walk out with a phone today. The other one, I got to check with the household and see what we want to do. Whereas now on internet grab and go, which allows you to also get the video hooked up on a self-install, it's doing extremely well. And so I'm really excited about our opportunity to utilize what was already a very effective wireless channel for us in the West to now get that synergy upside on the home front as well. And so that it's early days, but we see that as something that there's probably more interest in it than we saw, and there's more, we're better at the execution of it than we had expected to be by now. So that's, you know, that's certainly one. The second, as you referred to, is going back after the near net and getting those homes passed on net and trying to do it at scale. One of the things we've done well in the Rogers area is you know, what we call bulk deals with a condo corporation. And so that's something that we have strong execution in the East, and we're planning and have already started to leverage that with our developer relationships in the West. And so I'm quite excited about that opportunity as well. If we get, you know, the homes passed and get the right penetration on them, which, you know, we've always said our midterm target is to target 50% penetration of the homes passed for the new builds that we have. The third is, I would say, a refocus on the execution on internet. You know, for a while, I would say, a long while, TELUS was really leading on price in the Western market. If you were to look at rack rates, they were typically $15 to $25 below Shaw. And so what you would have seen already is promotional pricing that matches so that we start to diminish the value proposition based on price alone. And you can expect us to leverage off everything else in terms of network, service, et cetera. But we wanted to get going on that right out of the gate. And some of that translates to a bundle as well. You know, the Shaw wireless bundle, it's interesting, you know, it came across as sort of a deep discount on wireless. You can only get it with a bundle, and you're paying rack rate on internet. So when you looked at the bundle of $125 to $135, it was actually about the same price. And I say about, it was $5 to $10 less than the TELUS bundle. So it really wasn't a deep discount, and so we just capitalized on that now with the Rogers wireless instead of Shaw wireless. And so that's having a very good impact.
But you shifted a little bit where the value is perceived. Like
That's right.
They had the wireless at next to nothing, but the internet full price. I think you've tried to shift the value equation a bit.
You're getting a 5G network now on the Rogers network, which together with the investments, we've always had a good network in BC. In Vancouver more specifically. We've now built out more of the rural areas, but most importantly, the corridors. So you would have seen Highway 14 is largely complete, Highway 16, we've done big parts of that. So I would say the brand recognition of coverage, very good in BC, and we had been doing the same thing over the last year and a half in Alberta. And so this perception of an inferior network quality is not only, I would say, diminished, it's actually reversed. And given a lot of the, you know, the 5G bars customers are now seeing, particularly in Calgary and Edmonton, which has been a strong growth market for us as well, we're capitalizing on that. And so so to your point, Vince, what you see is a lot of brand recognition for the better network of Rogers Wireless. And so you're seeing that come through. And then the last piece, and you touched on it, is new to Canada, whether it's immigration or students that are coming on board or temporary workers. All three of those, we had always been very good on the wireless side and in taking dominant share on that. In the East, on the Rogers brand, we've been doing it with internet, piloting the grab and go on internet that I talked about several months ago. So that's been working well. And so now what you see us doing is You will see that in airports, Calgary and Vancouver, as we launch it there as well. And we're very good at promoting advertising in the host country of where a lot of these folks are coming from. And I would say the execution on that piece of it is very good as well. And so as we think about New to Canada with Vancouver and Toronto leading that, we feel well positioned in having the triple play there. But we continue to see growth in all markets, Calgary and Edmonton as well as throughout Alberta.
So, Tony, a lot of those revenue synergy initiatives sound to me like multiple different ways to get better internet ads. Like, as of the 150,000 or so new internet sub ads in Western Canada per year, you can get 70 or 80,000 of those instead of 10,000 that would drive these revenue synergies. Is there also any kind of pricing component to when you think about revenue synergies that I'm sure you've noticed now that you own the business, that what they get for internet and video in the West is less than what you're getting in Ontario? And any way to sort of game that system to narrow that gap over time?
The expectation is the market will tell us, and in particular, as we continue to compete with TELUS. So in some ways, it'll depend on the consumer appetite, because ideally what we'd like to do is, our products are deflationary by nature. So what we like to do is capitalize on that by up-tiering, up-speeding the customer and continually trying to, further penetrate their wallet in a way that they feel like they're getting more value. And so now they get 1 gig instead of the 100 meg they were previously getting. And so expect us to capitalize on that more for more strategy, while at the same time, what I would describe as adjusting the price perception that Shaw was just more expensive than TELUS. So you'll see both of those happening in the marketplace at the same time, with a quest to have net revenue growth. Today it sits at a decline, and that's really the focus, is let's get revenue growth. And it's going to take a bit of time, but those are the fundamentals of it.
When you say decline, just to be clear for everybody in the room, you're talking about just the wireline revenue in Western Canada was
that's decline. Right. The Shaw results that you
not
would have
on
all
a consolidated
seen.
Basis. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's right.
You mentioned the near net opportunity. Can I just ask a subset on that on fixed wireless? Is that something? And maybe there's an Eastern Canada answer to this question as well. But is that also an opportunity to use your better spectrum and network reach to tap into a market Shaw wasn't?
It is. Fixed wireless access, we think about it as, first and foremost, we think about networks in this ordering. We have deep fiber, and on a relative basis, Rogers had more than Shaw in terms of fiber already in the network and directly to the home. And so where we have those, and we'll deploy some of those near net, what you'll see us and you would have seen Rogers do in our markets is move to passive optical. And so, that's a strategy where we have fiber to the home. In places where we have coax for what I always call the last mile, we are on the 10G Cable Labs roadmap. So DOCSIS 4.0 is working out really well. And I've quoted before, for those homes, that upgrade sits at less than $200 Canadian per home. And so that's very effective in getting not only competitive speeds, but continue to offer speeds and bandwidth that's well ahead of where the market is and continues to be. So we feel good about that. Where we don't have those, what I would call wired networks, then we will look to fixed wireless access. And this month we're launching, what I would call the latest in fixed wireless access modem, which is really similar to what you saw T-Mobile deploy over the last several months. But that will be to augment for rural where we don't otherwise have it. We want to be careful in the way we do it so that we don't strain the network. But the fact that it's rural, we just generally have less volume to begin with. So we don't see it as an urban play. And our systems are set up so that when you walk in and you're looking for internet, we have addresses to sort of say, okay, fixed wireless access is the alternative for you. versus a wireline. We will always index to a wired connection first. It's just a better experience in terms of bandwidth and reliability. And then the last one, which we announced, is the work we're doing with SpaceX and Lynk Global. And think about that as, in the first instance, about safety, reliability, and redundancy. That'll be a long roadmap to be a substitute for fixed wireless access. And so we'll see how that played out, but we're talking a long time out for that.
Great. I'm going to hit the balance sheet question now, because usually it's like at the end of the presentation we do that, but this is a key topic that investors bring up with me all the time. Is you know, your leverage ended up a bit higher than I think you expected when the deal closed for a number of reasons. And there's this pretty hard target that seems out there of 4.5 times leverage for the end of next year, or else you could get downgraded. What gives you so much confidence? I mean, it seems like there's a pretty small margin of error there. The macro environment goes the wrong way. Quebec or competition for some reason goes the wrong way. TELUS competition goes the wrong way. Like, what buffer do you have to give you so much confidence? Like, are there the non-core asset sales that give you so much confidence, or could you issue equity if you had to? Why are you so confident that this won't be a problem?
I think a couple of things. One is the fastest way to get leverage down, not to tell you what you already know, is grow EBITDA. And so, you know, we came together. The reason it was higher was just the higher interest rates and what it did to the valuation of derivatives on our balance sheet. And so, you know, that's why it came in slightly higher. But nonetheless, we are where we are in terms of 5.3 on close. What we're seeing is the execution of our core business prior to Shaw better than we would have expected. And so we're looking forward to a continuation of that execution, all the things I talked about. And so, you know, I always say $1 billion of debt reduction at our scale means 0.1 reduction in leverage. $500 million of EBITDA is a 0.5 reduction. And so, first and foremost, it's the execution on the EBITDA side. And, you know, we fully appreciate the world's never perfect and things happen. And, of course, our plans and the way we think about and have put out the directional declines don't necessarily assume the world has to be perfect. You know, we're always going to have to be competitive, particularly with a four-player market that all have, you know, what I would describe as well-capitalized balance sheets as well, although some with similar pressures. So it's really the EBITDA execution. In terms of asset sales, there are a few areas that I would put in the category, and the biggest one is real estate. Probably have 30 to 40% of excess owned real estate that are material numbers. And so we're going to go through the process of selling those. And that'll be over the course of, you know, I would say 6 to 12 months, and even in some cases 24 months, because what we want to do is, you know, a lot of this valuable stuff is now in inner city. And we'll take it to full development value, not put any shovels in the ground, and then liquidate it so we get full value for it. So that's how we see that playing out. There may be the opportunity, if we wanted to take it, to sell it sooner and to get more cash in our jeans sooner. But right now, we don't see the need to have to do that. So we have a much more methodical approach on what I would call asset sales. Our intent is to remain investment grade. And so we will continue to look at opportunities to deal with leverage and do what we need to do. But we don't feel like we need to issue equity, and particularly not at these valuation levels. So I think it's a long list of other opportunities before we even have to consider an equity issuance.
Just to clarify a couple things on the real estate, if you don't mind, you're not talking about selling office space to be used as office space. You have properties that can be repurposed for industrial or residential. Is that where the value comes from?
That's right. Okay. And we have more than we need of it. So if you're to look at our campus, just off of Yonge and Bloor, fairly large campus, that's very valuable condo space these days. and we probably only utilize about 50% of that space. So we could more cost effectively relocate somewhere and sell that.
And the other clarification is, we've tried, it doesn't, there's not a lot of disclosure on the square footage and the type of real estate in any of your filings that we can find. I mean, when you say material, like, can you give anybody like ballpark? Are you talking north of $1 billion for all the real estate collectively? Not that it could all get done in 6 months, but if everything you're talking about with that 30-40%, does it aggregate to over $1 billion?
It does. That's the magnitude we're talking about. And I don't want to overstate it, so I wouldn't say a lot more than $1 billion, but you know, conservative estimates would put it at just over $1 billion in executing that excess space.
And just to knock off the other assets, I mean, you didn't mention them, so I assume they're not priorities, but let me throw the towers at you first. We've had a tower discussion many times in the past, but that's still untouchable strategically in your view, even though the valuation gap is huge?
I think right now it continues to be a competitive advantage for us. Particularly in urban areas. And so as we think about urban settings, those are building tops. And so we have access but don't own them. In terms of the broader tower and doing something on that, just not in the cards right now. As I said, it continues to be, we believe, a competitive advantage, particularly given the national spread on that. And as we look to the way it's played out south of the border, quite a number of years into it, it does introduce its own complexities in terms of access, location on towers, and leverage that you have when it's time to renew. So not in the cards right now.
Fair enough. And Cogeco Blue Jays, is there anything you want to say on either of those? People ask all the time, so I figure I better ask you.
Yeah, on sports, we continue to see value in it. Continues to grow, so no intent to sell any of the sports assets. And similarly on Cogeco, we're a cable company, and we have an investment in a cable company. And so no intent to liquidate that.
Let's shift back to the wireless market. First, just the market size itself. I mean, it's been quite impressive at 1.6 million in the past year of how many subs the whole industry's adding. Obviously, you guys are taking a leading share of that, but the market itself, any further thoughts on why it's so strong and if how sustainable it is into Q2 and Q3 at those kind of levels?
Well, we're seeing, two-thirds of the way into the second quarter, we continue to see a strong backdrop in the wireless space. It's always hard to know, but in and around what you would have seen in the first quarter. And so, as you said, strong growth numbers of over 5% year-on-year that we haven't seen in the industry in a long time. And the fundamental issue is really population growth is the biggest driver of it. There is, a bit of a pull forward, if you want to call it that, of foreign students. But I think that's worked its way through largely in the fourth quarter of last year. And so what we are seeing is a steady stream that seems to be just that steady. And so that's the biggest one. Lower penetration rates have always been an opportunity in Canada compared to some of the other countries, particularly the U.S. And so what we're seeing is the penetration rates continue to climb nicely. So those would be the two biggest factors that we continue to see having legs in the second quarter. What it means in the back half, all the predictions in terms of population growth continue to be strong. And so our expectation is we'll execute the way we need to execute to capture the right market share. And so the growth should continue to be there.
Can we talk a little bit about the pricing balance versus that volume growth? There have been some people, you can imagine, who have been a bit critical of your first move from 85 to 65 on the Rogers brand, pretty quickly matching or even leading down to $39 on the Flanker brand versus Freedom. Is this something you don't apologize for at all and say, look, we're winning on volume and those customers will generate lifetime revenue if it comes with slightly lower ARPU up front? So be it. Is that your answer, or do you actually think these things are not potentially dilutive to ARPU for some reason?
I would say it this way. As we, as a leadership team, thought about our priorities a year and a half ago, it was really on regaining leadership share on a number of fronts, but particularly in wireless. And so what you saw us do is reevaluate what our value proposition was in each segment of the market. And so where you see us today, we're pleased that it's a play out of the strategy that we had a year and a half ago. And I'll come back to it. But, you know, if I start at the top end, we were way over indexed on flanker, not only Rogers, but the industry, if I took you back 2-3 years. And so we had to get the focus back on Rogers. If I were to look at Q1, more than 3/4 of our loading net adds were on the Rogers brand. So there's an indexation back to the premium brand, which is good to see. The other piece...
Can I just clarify? I mean, premium brand at 65 is still better than Fido at 45 or 50. Is that simple math correct?
Yeah. Now, when you say the new plans, $65 cap plans, yeah. So one was reindexed back to Rogers. The second thing we wanted to do was, or as part of it, is redefine the flanker category. The value propositions were getting, I would say, out of hand and blurred with premium. In that the buckets were just too big. They just didn't make sense. So we redefined the value proposition for Fido. And then what you saw was, you know, the typical $45 plan in Fido, it was a big chasm between that and the $85. So the next move was to then fill in that white space with a cap plan on the Rogers brand. And we would lead with 5G. As part of that. And so that's what you've seen play out. That was really part of the differentiation of flanker and premium and then filling in the space in between. So that you, what you saw is the execution of that. It's as simple as that. And so we're pleased to see that what it's doing is taking the Fido customer and saying for an extra, and right now the promo is at $55, for an extra $10 to $20, I'm moving into 5G with a pretty good size data bucket on that. And so it's accretive to ARPU in terms of the impact, which is sort of where you were going. And then the last piece I'd say is we had neglected the prepaid space and we were net losers on prepaid. Prepaid has and continues to be a good market segment, particularly for temporary workers, new to Canada, students or immigration. And a lot of them, or most of them, behave like postpaid in the sense that they have credit cards on file, automatic top-up. It's a good market, and we were losing share there. So we went back at that market with Chatter, Rogers, and Fido prepaid across all our dealer channels and regained share there. And so what you see us is getting share in prepaid. The flanker is much more defined, and... disproportionately getting more share on the premium brand. So that's really the execution of the brand strategy that we've talked about from the outset that is really coming to life.
Do you have any stats, Tony, on the life cycle of the new to Canada market that where you can clearly see they may come in at a price point that's dilutive to your consolidated ARPU, but within a year or 2 years they actually become neutral or additive, so you're quite happy to load them all up in year one, even if it's puts you on a math that makes you look slightly less in terms of ARPU growth versus Bell and Telus? You don't care because you know what the trajectory is? Is that a fair way to characterize it? Do you have any stats on that?
Yeah, we do. But before I get to that, let me just clarify, we're chasing revenue. And in a growing market, we want to make sure we get leading share in every segment of that market. And so, and you see that in our top line growth numbers in terms of revenue share. So I'm piecing together this question, Vincent, and the last one. We aren't going after share at the expense of ARPU. What you're seeing play out in ARPU is greater penetration at all three categories, in particular prepaid. Because I often get asked the question, well, why does your ARPU sit a dollar less than your other two main competitors? The reality is we have twice the prepaid base. If you took that out, then we sit at $58 and change, same as the others. So look at our strategy as being getting leading share at market ARPU in each of those categories. So we're not consciously trading one at the other. It's the mix that you're seeing come through as we get share across all of it. New to Canada, you know, there often you think about that as, you know, coming in at the low end, and there's certainly that, but you get a good mix coming in at wanting the unlimited as well. And so the migration patterns are similar to what we otherwise see in the base, although your suspicion is right, it happens a lot faster because they may start with a prepaid or a Fido, and then as they get settled, you quickly see within 6 to 12 months them moving up the scale in terms of the packages they have. And so that's working out quite well.
No, that's excellent. Sorry to belabor wireless so much, but I think it is obviously a critical topic for you guys. And the turnaround in the wireless business the past couple of years has been remarkable. So trying to dwell on it a bit, I think, is worthwhile for everybody in the audience. So last question on this is, look, I don't want you to take this the wrong way, but we were sitting together in August of 2019 after the unlimited data plans came out, and there was a sense of confidence that it would not be dilutive to ARPU right away, that there'd be this upward-downward trade that would come out neutral. Are you highly confident that we're not getting down that slippery slope again with the 85 to 65, that there's enough currents of movement there, than the evidence you see that this is not going to lead to 2 quarters from now, you're saying, oh my gosh, this is 5% dilutive to service revenue temporarily. This isn't a repeat of that?
No, we're not seeing that in the data at all in terms of that happening. So there is no expectation that we are going to see dilutive ARPU. In fact, we continue to be optimistic about the prospects for ARPU growth. Over the last year, it's largely for the industry been on the back of roaming, and the underlying ARPU has remained stable. If you're to look at all three of us, even in the last quarter, if you had, you know, adjusted for some roaming price increases we opted not to do, as well as base adjustments that our competitors did, it's not much different in movements in ARPU amongst the industry. And so as we see, therefore, a net increase of what I would call flanker to Rogers, whether it's at the 65 or onto the unlimited side of the plans, that there's opportunities for continued growth.
And I'm going to open up to the audience in 1 second after this last question, just in case anybody has anything. The good news, I would say, of the unlimited move is it seemed to start Rogers on a path of better customer satisfaction scores and perception, and I think you've augmented that with a lot of training and new systems for the frontline staff and other cultural changes. Everything seems to be working phenomenally. But I think some people are worried that the last 2 years have been a bit of a mirage, that there wasn't normal competition because of the Rogers Shaw deal going on, and now we're getting back to more normal competition. So how's Rogers going to fare up against the more aggressive regional new entrant, again, if we can call it that? Do you have any clear stats that would show from 2019 to today, like how much better you are? Like, we see it a little bit in the churn, but you must have net promoter scores and likelihood to recommend and other studies that would reinforce that, or any stats you can share to give people even more confidence that the new Rogers has a much stronger foundation for defense than what Rogers versus new entrants may have had in 2018, 2019.
Yeah. Our turnaround in wireless was really, and if you were to ask to any one of our team members, because I ask it all the time, what do you think is going right and what are you worried about? And the biggest change has been back to fundamentals. So we are focused on, you know, what I would call simple things. Let's have very simple, clear pricing and promotions that are very targeted. So if you were to walk into any one of our stores 2 years ago, you would have seen a list of 30 price promotions for that weekend. Today, you probably only see 3. And so that's allowed us to be much more focused, targeted at busy selling times, and capitalizes better on the distribution network that we have. And so, you know, that's first and foremost. Second was fill in the holes where we had network gaps. and get on those quickly so that the best network claim is real. And so we're seeing that, as you said, net promoter scores are continually improving, and brand perception continues to move strongly upwards. So we're pleased with what we're seeing in terms of those fundamentals.
Anybody? Go ahead, Craig. I'm going to have to repeat it, but... Just for their webcast, if you don't mind, Tony, the questions on cross-border roaming traffic and are the volumes back to all-time high levels, and what does that mean for ARPU? Is that basically,
Let me dissect it for you. I would say on the consumer side, volumes are higher than they were pre because the base is higher. But if you were to look at number of roamers relative to the base, it still sits at about 85%. Of what it previously was. So it's being more than offset by the sheer volume of population growth that I talked about. On the business side, it's still running probably 30 to 40% of what it used to be. So business is still much lower. And so those are really the facts on the two sides of it. But we're at a point now, you know, in the second quarter, I would say, you saw a lot of it come back over the last year. And so year on year, there's much less room than you would have seen in the industry over the preceding 12 months.
You answered a lot of my CapEx questions and others in your earlier comments. So let me switch gears to something we don't usually talk about, but the Blue Jays. I mean, it is remarkable, the transformation in the stadium and the vibe in there and how busy it is every night, not just opening night. If the Jays, let's hope they make the playoffs, and hopefully last night was a better indicator of how they're going to do versus the week before that. But if they don't make a playoff run, can they actually be profitable for the first time just from regular season attendance, given how many people are in there?
I mean, we've never disclosed, you know, the operations of Jays in and of themselves. You know, there's a lot of variables that go into it, and depending on how they're doing, you know, whether we decide to invest in talent in July, you know, so all of those factors sort of go into it. But you're right in terms of, as we look at it in and of itself, and, you know, those investments we made for the stadium were intended to be self-funding, and we're pleased that the numbers are stronger than we expected, and you see that in the attendance. The other thing we've done a better job of is capitalizing on our ownership. And so you see it throughout the commercials. You see it throughout the in-stadium branding in terms of Rogers being present. Monetizing the value of that asset beyond just stadium attendance has been an important aspect for us. So long-winded way of saying the financials continue to improve. But it's a long season, and, you know, that'll depend largely on how the team does in terms of what you see in stadium. But not just in stadium, but viewership numbers continue to be extremely strong, typically well above a million viewers, which, you know, to put it in perspective, you know, a Leafs game, which would be the most watched in Canada, would... you know, on a Saturday night pre-playoff, be somewhere around 1 to 2 million. And so this is a Jays game that are on almost every day. So really strong viewership numbers. So the monetization of the asset is coming in nicely.
With the 1 minute we have left, let me just ask, I've asked everybody the macro question, so throw it at you as well. Anything in either the consumer side of down-tiering to save money or anything with your business customers with bad debts or late payments? Any evidence yet that a recession could be coming for the telecom sector? Not, I know there's a recession in some sub-segments, but yeah. For telecom?
Yeah, as you would expect, we're watching it really closely. You know, we're seeing it on other sectors, and today a few of the banks, you know, talked about higher loan loss provisions. We aren't seeing, I was going to say we aren't seeing anything significant. We aren't seeing anything small either. In terms of changes to cash collections or changes to tiering of plans or downgrading. So nothing that is popping up in our sector.
It's good to hear. Well, with that, we're exactly on time. So again, Tony, thank you very much for taking the time with us and your insightful comments. We're going to think about a 10-minute break, and my colleague Greg Williams will be up on stage with our next speaker. So once again,
great. Thanks all. So much, Tony. Thank you, Vince.